Hell yeah. The Gaming Guru Podcast. Diesel, the best gaming podcast in the world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe it? Season 3 of the Gaming Guru Podcast is upon us. We did manage to survive the year that shall not be named. And here we are in 2021, the future. I keep thinking back to some of those movies as a kid, like Demolition Man, 1996. We'd be having flying cars, and the city of Los Angeles and San Francisco had grown together so large that it was one mega super city. But instead, we just have, I don't know, what's Elon Musk up to now? It's certainly not flying cars.
Just
but,
being a billionaire and posting memes, man.
This is not the future we asked for. But no. Welcome to those who are returning. Thank you very much for joining us for season 3. For those for the first time listening to us, my name is Gareth Woods, and I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Timothy Lester. And we together are the Gaming Guru Podcast. We talk about everything from A to Z in terms of games, but we like to really dive into particular topics. And so I think before we jump into our first one of the year, we've got a nice juicy one that we want to kind of sink our teeth into. Maybe let's just catch up in terms of, you know, everything that's happened during the break. We obviously took some time off since the end of season 2, took some time off, caught up on some of our backlog of games. Tim, what have you been playing these days?
Yeah, it's good to be back on the pod. I got married over this last break, which is pretty dope.
It's a small matter of
casual.
Getting married.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of games, both good and bad, and things in between. I've noticed sometimes I have the bad habit of spending too much time on like games that don't deserve it.
Yeah,
like Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I somehow managed to rack up like 120 hours in.
Wow.
And I keep comparing that to like my Witcher 3 playthroughs, and I'm like, I easily put in like 150 hours without like a sweat, you know. This game, it's like I don't even know where the time went. I'm like, what was I doing? Like, was it even? No, it wasn't that good. Definitely one that I could have like I could have rather just like beelined through it. I did too much of that of side questing, and yeah, catching up with a bit of backlog, making my way through some Telltale stuff now as just like for something completely different. You know, I can just click through a casual story. Jumped in on a bit of the new Path of Exile League this weekend, and that was a good time. And yeah, I guess my game of the year for 2020 must have been Prey, because I played it like twice, and I played a whole bunch of Moon Crash. And even though it's a 2017 game, I feel like
that's
it was so appropriate and just aged really well.
Ah, so yeah. Your game of the year was made 3 years ago. So yeah, interesting, yeah. Interesting game of the year nominee from you. I spent the holiday, if you want to call it that, babysitting my kid, because we moved from Johannesburg and obviously couldn't get him to school so late in the year. So since pretty much November, I had the four-year-old around, and so we play a lot of games, so a lot of younger games. We played a lot of Sackboy's Adventures and Overcooked and those sort of games, which are frustrating at the best of times, more so with a four-year-old. Especially some of the kind of two-player games where you can't just, you know, put him on your back and carry him through the game. You have to do everything together. Definitely seeing the kid's got some talent. Kind of hedging the retirement plans on his future esports career.
As long as his actions per minute.
Yeah, I know. I need to check all these APM and all those sort of skills. Get him a professional esports coach for his fifth birthday. Yeah, it the one thing that did happen, you know, you mentioned Game of the Year's, your nominee. Mine, probably a little bit more recent, would be The Last of Us Part 2, which incidentally did win several Game of the Year's awards in 2020. Just had to add that in there. And it's a good segue to what we want to talk about this year, which is, in fact, Game Awards in general. So different publications do their own game awards. They'll name something the game of the year or, you know, different categories. And then to confuse matters, you'll have certain games bringing out their own game of the year edition, even though no one asked and no one called them that. It's one of those. And here's this game's game of the year edition. Yeah, no one thinks this is game of the year. But that certainly does confuse. It's what other, I guess, more subtle games would call their definitive edition or complete edition, where, you know, you get all the bells and whistles, all the DLC, all the extra bits in one package. But some call it the game of the year edition. But the big one, I guess, is called the Game Awards, which happens usually at the end of the year in December. And it's generally run by a gentleman called Jeff Keighley, who, you know, had started the awards show several years ago. But naturally, I don't know if you've heard about it, 2020 had this little disease called COVID-19, and that impacted several things. I don't know if you've noticed, if you've gone outside and seen how different things are, but it certainly influenced the gaming industry, not only in terms of how games are made with, you know, developers, a lot of them working from home, but also in terms of, you know, the kind of games that got popular. You know, all of a sudden, some of the super popular games were ones where we're sitting, you know, building comfortable little critter environments in Animal Crossing, or stabbing our colleagues in the back in Among Us. Those became the kind of like standout games for the year. But one other thing was the Game Awards were obviously impacted. They were obviously all online. It seemed to be a little bit more of a game, almost award ceremony by numbers, rather than having any kind of real sort of cultural relevance. And so Tim and I asked the question to ourselves and to you, and hopefully we can investigate further, is do award shows still have any relevance kind of in the gaming space? Have they become this kind of awkwardly ubiquitous sort of like, yeah, game of the year editions, or this is our game of the year, or this has got 40,000 nominations? I mean, look at Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk was arguably the biggest flunk of the year, but, you know, days before launch already carried several kind of publications' game of the year stamps. Maybe not for launch year, but for their, like, you know, when they do previews, like most anticipated game or best in show for E3, all those sort of things. So, Tim, your thoughts on game of the, you know, game awards in general. First of all, how do they work? You know, what's your opinion on them? And I guess let's hopefully answer the question of, do we think they're still relevant?
So award ceremonies in the game industry, sort of, you know, let's say that we can take it back to the early 80s when they sort of first started coming about. For a long time, games were seen as just toys. But as soon as we started to recognize that game development was an art form and games themselves are an expression of that art form, the next logical step would then be celebrating it. And that's really what award shows are. They're sort of an event where we can come together, celebrate the art form, celebrate the people involved in creating those works of art as well, whether those be the developers, the voice actors involved, you know, you got the musical composers, just the whole cast and crew that's involved in sort of bringing these experiences to us. Something I read that kind of stood out to me is that it takes years to create a game, but just minutes to judge a game. You know, we play a game for like 10 seconds, you know, 10 minutes, and we already have an impression, and it's like either a thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, or a view bomb. And in sort of the like information soup that we live in at the moment with game criticism, I feel like there isn't enough space given to actually like appreciating the people behind these experiences. And we don't have a lot of those. And it's quite a miracle that the Game Awards managed to pull something together in a year that a lot of other events and ceremonies found to be a challenge and were subsequently canceled.
Yeah. So in terms of how these kind of award shows work, I mean, there are lots of different ways. I mean, you've got like the Academy Awards that is all sort of, you know, exactly that. It's this film academy, and, you know, a lot of the members are secret. You don't know who's on them, and they kind of vote and nominate who they think are the best games of the year, which tends to lend itself towards, I suppose one would say, more art-focused recognition, which is why something like, you know, even the biggest blockbuster movies, your, you know, next Marvel, you know, billion-dollar hit, generally aren't there, because I don't know if there's this disdain from the kind of art critic kind of movie world for those sort of movies, or it's just the fact that like they are trying to keep the focus on the artistic side of kind of the movie industry. Whereas, you know, you get others that are completely people's choice, people vote in. And there are obviously risks to either. I mean, the one is heavily political in that, you know, you've got a group of people deciding the direction of what is popular or not, or what's awarded. And the other, you get just mob mentality. I mean, the irony was this year you had The Last of Us Part Two winning 7 awards, which is a record for the Game Awards. But it being review bombed by a lot of people on things like Metacritic, an online site that kind of measures different review scores, because people really were unhappy with the subject matter. Very few had anything to say about the game itself. It's more about the subject matter. It dealt with, like, lesbian relationships. It dealt a bit with the killing off of certain key characters. It dealt with different female body types. And so for a lot of people, it's like, nope, don't want to deal with that. So they, you know, review bombed the game. And so if the voting for the game was the way Game of the Year was decided, then definitely it would not have won Game of the Year, let alone 7 different category awards. And so, you know, there are different evils. Do you want to talk about perhaps how some of the game awards are run? I know that this one in particular is more of a like a jury vote. If I'm correct.
So from what I know, games are chosen by a jury of like 95 media and influencer outlets, and so the nominee votes represent sort of like a consensus of each of those outlets. But then the final winners are blended in like a weighted vote where 90% of that weight goes to the jury and 10% goes to gamers, which sounds like quite out of whack. And yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But I did a bit of research and it looks like they did some polls to see how congruent that like 10% of gamers really is with like the top nominees. And like Last of Us Part Two like still came out on top. So it's usually in line, from what I can tell. And I know that they still have category for like Gamers Choice Award type vibe. So, I mean, like gamers are still getting their voices heard. But the way they do this one is kind of just like steered in the direction of the media outlets.
Yeah. But I guess the problem is that, you know, with it being, I wouldn't say controlled, but more heavily steered by things like the reviewers and the, you know, these game journalists sort of kind of are the people who are voting, is that it starts feeding this idea that I'm going to get almost tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, but that there is a group of people, no matter how, you know, seemingly representative, that are voting or steering gaming in the direction that they choose as opposed to what gamers want. And so, you know, hopefully they're not marketing execs who are trying to create, you know, another ad campaign disguised as a game, but it's still got a kind of like political agenda. Because let's be honest, if it were up to the most popular votes, games of the year would be things like League of Legends and Fortnite and all that, just purely based on, you know, player number and popularity and the content, the amount of content that's created for them, not these kind of cinematic masterpiece type games like the nominees this year were, you know, Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us Part Two, previous winners like God of War, you know, that are for one, seemingly almost always single player games, and secondly, focused on kind of the more cinematic storytelling rather than, you know, sheer gameplay enjoyment. It's more that you're playing an interactive movie then you are playing a game. So it's a bit of a weird genre if you compare it to, you know, other genres like music or movies. You know, as I'm saying that right now, sorry to interrupt, I'm just thinking that like when you're comparing genres of music, you can almost say, yeah, but at least it's all music. You know, and when you're watching a movie, it already starts getting more elaborate, because when is, for example, a action movie ever going to win movie of the year? When is a horror movie ever going to win? There are very few comedies that have ever won. I think there are a few, but like those movies just won't win just by virtue of the type of movies they are. And the same with games. It's like, when will a puzzle game ever win game of the year or a racing game. They just can't win when compared to, they're just like in the wrong genre.
That almost. Cinematic experience, yeah. Like narrative driven experiences. No, you're 100% right. And like, to comment on a point you made earlier, like it's true. What we've seen sort of in like a general, let's say cinematic award shows have become, they talk about Oscar bait, right?
Yeah.
Films that are made specifically for the Academy to like drool over and go, the mise-en-scene.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's, and is that, you know, are we starting to, because like, let's say the, like you say, the handful of gatekeepers, for instance, the people who decide on which games are good, which games get awards, is so exclusive. It starts creating that that echo chamber of what is of what is good, what is quality, and what deserves 100%. Praise and award. And would we then see like the Game Awards kind of pigeonholing like game development into various streams where it's like, okay, yeah, this is Game Awards bait, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I must say, like, you know, looking at the list from 2020, you find far fewer nominees than we have in the past. And I noticed that was happening with the Oscars as well, right? Over the years, the nominees just kind of got fewer and fewer, and the same films were nominated for like several or more categories. It's like when they like the movie, it's like just give them an award for every category.
Yeah.
You know, like who else gets representation? So
yeah, I've always found that weird as well when two games in the same subcategory are voted for the main award. So you've got two action games, for example, both in Game of the Year total category. Because then you're going, well, if you win Game of the Year, aren't you guaranteed to also win your subcategory? Because, and yet sometimes that doesn't happen, where you have like the game will win, you know, best shooter, and then we'll lose to another shooter in Game of the Year. And you're just like, what? How does that even work? Is it the best in its category? Yes. Then how's it also, you know, I mean, if it's the, if it loses the category, it should also lose the main one. But yeah,
yeah, that, like that if you aside, win Game of the Year, but then like
you should win every other category,
best game direction.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I don't, if the game was if the game was wasn't directed well, like how. Yeah, exactly.
I think the other thing for me for is, so even if there's this democratization of the voting panel in that, you know, it's a bunch of people from around the world from different publications. And I know there were two South African publications that were included. I think it was SA Gamer and Critical Hit had its writers were allowed to vote or whatever or create their nominations for their Game of the Year. Now, the problem is even that is still not representative because, I mean, I know most of the writers on those publications and they're great and they're super knowledgeable, but like we're talking about white guys. We're talking about 20 to 30 something year old white guys. That's who, you know, are the nominees or the people making nominations here from South Africa. And so other countries might be different, but that's going to probably be the demographic of the majority of game journos because for them to have climbed the ranks to get into those roles, the only guys playing games a couple of years ago were white guys. And so it is, it's a bit difficult to go, yeah, we've got this representative kind of, you know, the journalists from across the country are representative of gamers, but yeah, I don't know that they are. And so it starts begging the question for me personally of going, do I care what a bunch of other journos think are the games of the year? You know, does it in any way impact my, you know, purchase behavior? Does it impact the games I try or, you know, my opinions on games? If I loved a game, but it gets, you know, trounced in the reviews and in the game awards, or if I hated a game and it won awards, does it change the way I feel about things? I mean, for yourself, Tim, do games awards have any bearing on you trying a game or buying a game or, you know?
So for me, the game awards have always been like, definitely like just a bit of a hype session.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every year people are talking about, you know, who the nominees and everyone has their ideas of what their biggest games were for the year. And then they like to pat themselves on the back when they're like, ah, oh, see, told you so. Like, you know, but for me, the hype train is more about the trailers. And I think like that's something where where the, I mean, look, like, I think more people would watch the Oscars if they'd have showed like trailers for like the next movies. Like Avengers film, right? Like, but it's not going to happen. It's all like suits and symphonies.
Yeah.
But for the Game Awards, it's really those announcements and those trailers that like, that add to the excitement. I mean, it's cool to see when game developers are getting up there and talking about like the process of what they went through and what their team went through in order to bring that like experience to us. And I think that's why we're drawn so much to some of these stories, like the development of like of God of War 4, you know, who had they created their own documentary about it, and it creates intrigue and interest in the industry and in those people behind the industry. I didn't think that I would know as much about like Corey Barlog, for instance, or Neil Druckmann, had I not been interacting with like the Game Awards and like, you know, gaming journalism in that way.
Yeah. Okay. Well then I guess the question is, as things are getting more democratized, where you go, you know, people are deciding what they like and consume. And I mean, we're even seeing that from the point of view of, people aren't watching, what would you call it, curated gaming content as much as they are watching individual streamers or YouTube channels. I mean, it used to be, let's be honest, a couple of years ago, the only way you could get gaming content was on TV, you know, a little half an hour review show that was months late. You didn't even know that it was months late.
Or something.
Yeah, like, those sort of things. What is it? The one Cyber something. And The Verge and all those sort of shows that I gave you like a half an hour little snippet of all the things happening in gaming. I didn't know if it was up to the date news or whatever. And so eventually we had websites that did it for us. You know, you've got the IGNs in the world where you're kind of getting all your news, and that's journalists obviously doing their stuff. But nowadays, like, people are getting their content directly from like their favorite players and their favorite content creators more so than from these kind of like curated, you know, if someone came to say, cool, we want to do a 24-hour like gaming channel, I'd say, you know, I don't know that anyone would want to consume 24 hours of gaming, but that they wouldn't just go to their favorite individuals in each of those games. So you're going to try and put together 24 hours worth of content and, you know, tell them about news and all that sort of stuff. Well, they're just going to, you know, find it themselves via Twitter and via, you know, their favorite streamers. And so at a point when websites and award shows are going, hey, these are the best games, you need to try them. Yeah, a lot of people are going, I'll just watch people play them on Twitch. And if I enjoy what I see, I'll buy it. And if I don't, if my friends are playing it, I'll play it. If they're not, I'm not. I think for me, that's where a lot of like award shows are losing a bit of their relevance personally. I think that is without even, and perhaps some of the stuff we need to talk about in future about the relevance of reviews in general, is the idea that there's a little bit of a paid for, you know, participation sort of situation where, you know, let's be honest, a lot of these reviewers are getting copies of games weeks in advance or getting flown out to, you know, 5-star treatment hotel type, you know, game previews at the big conferences and all that. And then they're told, okay, cool, now just give us your honest feelings about the game. Then they're not going to say bad things. Let's be honest. You've just been flown first class or business class across the world. You've been staying in hotels. They've shown you the game. You got to play it months before, treated like a celeb. And then what? You're going to tell the world that the game's trash? Like, let's be honest, you're not. You're going to find some saving grace about the game. And then, yeah, I guess people are getting a bit tired of these sort of paid for opinions. I mean, do you have any example of a game where you like you saw a review that like totally changed your mind on a game?
Not really. That hasn't really happened to me though. I have used game rankings and ratings to choose whether I buy it. Like, but in terms of, I'm only going to buy a game that has like over 90%, maybe an 80%. If it's at 80% on Metacritic, I'll ask my friends who played it what their consensus was. And they'll be like, oh, it was all right. blah, blah, blah. So that, like, in that sense, the Metro reviews do steer some of my purchasing power. But what I want to ask you, something that I find quite strange, I'm sort of like jumping off of that topic quickly, is how is it that some games can get nominated for these award shows before they're out or before like people have played them?
Yeah.
Like Death Stranding was like what, nominated for like Game of the Year or something, and we hadn't like no one
yeah.
played it.
I mean, yeah, I think
these reviews came out and they're like, guys, you're in for a this is not the game you thought it was.
You're opening a can of worms now, because and maybe it's something we can finish off with, is that there's a little bit of, I suppose, incest with the Game Awards itself and Death Stranding, in that Jeff Keighley, who's a huge fan of Kojima, who's the studio and the maker of Death Stranding, and was definitely by his side when Kojima was banned by Konami from attending the Game Awards when, you know, in previous years when they were kind of splitting ways after Metal Gear Solid. And so, in fact, Jeff even appears in Death Stranding. And yeah. So it is very, at least a real, real bitter taste in the mouth when you've got this game that, you know, I played and I have to be honest, hated. I understand why people, that's the difference, is when I review games, like I can give my own personal opinion, but still understand why other people like it. You know, I can go and like, I'm not a huge sports simulation fan guy, and so I'll play FIFA and be like, yeah, cool, it's a fun FIFA game. I enjoyed it. I preferred it to this one, or it's worse than that one. But I'm going, it's not going to occupy a lot of my time because I'm not a big FIFA fan. You know, I might prefer, you know, NBA 2K or whatever. Like, that's, you can understand that. But when a game that had this many flaws, in my opinion, gets nominated for a Game of the Year when it released, like, I think a week before the...
Yeah,
it released before really we before the awards, but it got I think it got nominated. It got nominated before it was out or something. I mean, let's check the details. Yeah. I think we might be muddying the water a little bit, but like, it had basically just come out and suddenly was nominated for Game of the Year. And you're going, the other nominees were all like released at least 3 or 4 months before. You know, you had like the normal like March and June windows where
most like play tested and reviewed already. Same story for like No Man's Sky, that was like one like most anticipated game.
Yeah, like... and ended up being an absolute farce.
It came,
you know,
and
you got 60 years later.
Yeah,
and so
but it won best
little
like
bit
ongoing
of dodginess
game.
There. Sorry, what?
It won best ongoing game 2020.
Yeah, well then that's a redemption story, but I think. Generally speaking, what we're dealing with here is you've got an industry that's grown and tried in a lot of ways to keep up with other industries such as music and movies by having the legitimacy, as it were, of an award ceremony to
event,
you know,
yeah.
100%. So, you know, if we want to rub shoulders and be as good as movies, we need to have
more 100%. Market at large, not just so, for like gamers TM.
Yes, 100%. We've got to have an event at the same level of the Oscars. And I'm sure if you were a fly on the wall in one of the pitch meetings, the term the Oscars of gaming must have come out at some stage during this process. I will basically stake my life savings, as pitiful as they are, on that term was used somewhere. But unfortunately or fortunately, games are very different in a lot of ways to movies and music. For one, they are evolving faster, in my belief. But the other thing is the diversity of categories, of types of gamers, and that I think are inordinately bigger or more diverse than they are in movies and music. And so, or maybe because it's grown so fast, is its ability to adapt and keep up has been, you know, kind of slower. But I guess one of the big problems in gaming is that because it's so new and it's caught up so fast, is that it's both trying to be novel and its own thing and keep adapting, but at the same time, like, do the things that the big older brothers were doing. That's sort of, you know, for a bit, I can't think of a better analogy, is going like, we're going to do things the way that is expected of other, you know, big media outlets, but we're also doing our own thing. And in that, it's kind of losing a lot of its relevancy. And so I think a big thing we're just seeing across the board in most movies, music, everything, is the democratization of who gets to decide what you watch. In the past, I mean, just look at Netflix, for example. Even Netflix is still mild curatorship in the fact that, like, it has to be on Netflix for you to watch it, and some things aren't. And it loosely recommends things, put things in categories, tells you what the top 10 trending shows in your country are like. But generally, you know, if you watch a bunch of stuff that's totally off trend, then its recommendations are going to be off trend for you. And it always says the more you watch and the more you like things, the better its recommendations will be. But they're just recommendations. Whereas, you know, you go back a couple of years, what was on TV? That was it. And you had like four channels, and then it got broadened by giving you more channels. Nowadays, like, you know, if I want to watch gaming content, go on Twitch and I've got like, what, a couple of million different options, different languages, different types of streamer, same game even, but then totally different. Someone's playing it modded, someone's doing speed runs, someone's doing it casual, someone's just like, you know, playing with his subscribers or friends. It's completely up to me what type of content I want to watch. And so it feels a little bit weird to then still have a group of people telling me what the best of, you know, the winners are, who I should be purchasing, who I should be playing. It just feels against the trend of the democratization of gaming.
Yeah, look, I think that the trend that the Game Awards are on right now is just going to like stay. And if anything, I could probably see them sort of like just crystallizing into this format that they have, and just going like more in on advertising and more in on celebrities, and trying to really like put it next to the Oscars. I don't see the Game Awards and Jeff Keighley sort of branching out to see more. I would love to see more diversity of genres for starters. Like as you said earlier, I know they have added more categories in recent years, like, you know, best streamer, like, you know,
esports
personality player. You know what I mean? So they're adding more categories as more, I guess, categories in gaming become relevant, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's going to be a category at some stage with, you know, Twitch records, you know, for viewership records, stuff like that, or, you know, greatest Twitch moment, or...
Yeah, 100%. Sure. And I think you can only speculate on what those categories will be, because, I mean, let's be honest, 3 years ago, what was a battle royale? And then suddenly it's like the most popular genre across multiple games, you know, since Fortnite and PUBG and Warzone and all those games kind of, you know, taken the fore on Twitch. I mean, what was a game like Among Us? You know, what do they call them? I don't even know what the genre is for those sort of games, like party sleuth games.
Party sleuth games. Hey, that's a good one. I actually played a similar one not too long ago with a couple of my wife's work colleagues. It was like a work function thing, and it was
eerily
similar to it was like Among Us, but not Among Us.
Okay.
It was it was like in the company of others.
But yeah, I think we're going to wrap things up there. Thanks, obviously, for everyone for listening. Please do let us know your thoughts on the subject of Game Awards show. I would love to know personally from you, do you even watch award shows? Do you care which games have won multiple awards? Do you just use it as a way to argue against your friends as to which game was better? Look how many awards it won compared to your one. Or is it something you just don't care about? Would love to know if it impacts your decision-making in terms of what games you play each and every year. Do the awards matter? And until next time, I've been Gareth Woods. I've been joined by Tim Lester, and we are the Gaming Guru Podcast. And we will check you again in 2 weeks' time with another tasty episode delving deep into another great topic in the world of gaming. Cheers. Ooh, baby.